previously broadcast program.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, 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 we're back. It is another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I'm in studios with...
Renee Jordan.
And you are listening to Soul Perspectives. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. We have a special guest on the line with us. Her name is Jessica Cade. She's an international award-winning and USA Today best-selling author, born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. Reading has always been a passion for her. And as a girl, Jessica enjoyed reading tales of fantasy and mystery, but always hoped to find characters that looked like her but didn't find characters that look like her. So that's just a little bit about our guests. But as we like to do during these COVID times, we like to check in with our guests and see, how are you doing? How has this quarantine situation been for you?
You know, I'm a hermit, so it hasn't really been that much different. I don't really spend a lot of time out in the world as it is. It's a struggle for my son. He's a kid. He wants to be with his friends, so I think that's been the hardest part about it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So what has it been like in Chicago these past couple of months? I know in Montreal we've been sort of in and out, and maybe had some time to enjoy the summer. What has been the situation for you?
It's been the same here. They have restrictions for everybody that no one really follows. That I can see, but they've been in and out of tying up the reins. We have gone out to some of the parks recreationally, social distancing, just to get my son out of the house, but we stayed in as much as possible, honestly.
Okay. And how has, because you're an author, you write full-time, right? That's correct?
No, not yet.
Not
Almost.
Yet? Almost. Yeah. Okay. How has it been creatively for you?
It has been a little bit of a struggle just because you're in the same space, and I tend to draw inspiration. So I used to take the train into downtown and just watch people. Mm. And that's one of the ways I pick up, you know, inspiration for characters or just, you know, whatever I can draw from the city. I put a lot of my city in my books, so... that has been a bit of a struggle because I'm using a lot more of the resources of my imagination than I typically would have to.
Mm. What would be something that you'd look for in terms of characters and reflection of characters in the people of your city?
So Chicago is so eclectic. Like, you have so many amazingly artistic people walking the streets of downtown and just taking the train, and you come in contact with people who have just this energy that kind of draws you into them. So I just see what naturally pulls me, what naturally grabs my eye. There have been quite a few people who I'm looking like, if they knew that I was writing them into these stories as, you know, fairies and whatever, but I just look for their energy. People who stand out, who don't, I feel like they're attempting to blend into the crowd, but there's something a little special about them. Those are the people that stand out to me.
Right.
Mm. And so do you normally write them in as secondary characters, or have you ever drawn some inspiration from someone on the outside and put them in as a primary character in the book?
I've only done that once where they became, I was so inspired by this person that I was like, I have to write a whole series about this person.
No,
he knows. So,
okay.
All right. So I approached him and I was like, listen, I have this character in my brain. Now, luckily we were at a book convention, so I didn't sound as insane. But I was like, would you like, he posed for the cover of the book. I'm like, I want you to be on the cover. Like, this has to happen. And I wrote a full series based off of seeing this person in his face and was just drawn to his energy. And luckily he agreed, and he didn't wipe me off as someone crazy.
Now, normally when children are introduced to the format of reading, they're sort of introduced into more traditional style books, traditional style novels. So usually if someone develops a love for reading, then they kind of branch off into these other categories. Now, you write fantasy books. Could you tell us a little bit about what is a fantasy book? And why did you choose this type of genre to get into?
Okay, so fantasy books are, it's exploring everything that we dream up, right? The things that aren't real, that we can't go out and experience in our everyday life, like vampires and dragons and things that we kind of wish were real, because it would make life just so much more exciting, and it gives us so many more
possibilities. I don't know if I'm going to wish about seeing a dragon when I open up. I think COVID is scared of them.
But you know, it's pushing the boundaries of our reality, right? I got into fantasy because of my mother. She was the sci-fi fantasy fanatic when I grew up. So my love for books came from my grandmother. My love for fantasy came from my mother. So my mother would have what she called sci-fi Saturdays in our household, where we would just sit down and watch and take in all the movies and all the just any type of fantasy medium that she could get her hands on. And that was our Saturdays. And we would have like pizza, and it was just a thing. It was a tradition for us. So growing up and loving those stories and seeing the movies and picking up and starting to read the books, I was like, this is great, but like, where are all the black people at? Where are all the, you know, the people of color that I see in my everyday life? I don't see them in these stories, not nearly enough. So, it came from that. It came from growing up with my mother, who loved aliens and vampires. And now that's what I write about.
What were some of your favorites from your childhood, like your favorite either TV shows or books or movies?
Fantasy-based, I would say, growing up, I loved Species, which is totally alien. I loved, anything vampires. That was my favorite until I saw Dracula 2000, Gerard Butler, and I was like, this is now my favorite vampire ever. Blade, I loved Blade. Oh, my God. That was, like, my first, like, oh, my God, he's a vampire, he's black, he's, like, a hybrid, which I write a lot of hybrids now. So it was like, that was my first, like, this is possible, right? And then getting my hands on books by, like, L.A. Banks, who was an African-American woman who wrote in this genre, and she wrote characters of color. And it was like, wait, okay, this is possible. I see myself in these books, and I'm like, but where are the others? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But those are some of my favorites. Like, I would sit in the corner all day long and just be so very happy.
Blade, that really brings back some memories. I remember when that was in the theater, and I think it was rated PG-17 or whatever here, because I remember not having the right ID to get in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I almost didn't get it. I was the last friend. I'm like, you're not going to do this to me? And he let me into the movie theater. But anyways, we digress. tell us a little bit about reading. I mean, like, it's always a thing in the black community in terms of, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we don't read, or we don't read as much as we do. Have you undertaken any sort of initiatives to introduce your books to the community? To sort of encourage reading?
So I've hosted a lot of, like, local meet and greets at libraries, and I've actually went into some schools to speak with children, because I feel like that's a good age to get them, where the kids I typically talk to were, like, 7th and 8th grade headed into high school. Because my material is not really appropriate for anyone younger than that, honestly. Okay. And then I also feel like they're going into high school, they're going to be thinking about what they want to be. And I think a lot of them had creative pursuits that they were so excited for, including reading and writing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the time that you really want to kind of help them and impress upon them that this is something that you could do, and that reading can be a part of your everyday life, and you don't have to be shunned for it. I was shunned, like, literally shunned as a child because I like to read. And it was the most traumatic experience.
Who shunned you?
Oh, my family. I had, you know, people who I thought were friends who were like, you're just always with a book, you know what I mean? And it's like, why is that a problem, you know? So I try to reach kids at that younger age, you know, to encourage just not even just with reading and writing, but any type of pursuits creatively, because a problem that's happening locally in our schools is that they're taking away funding from all of those creative programs, right? Yeah. Where if you're not, you know, playing a sport or, you know what I mean, something that's going to get the school on the scene, then it's not really given the attention that it deserves. So my goal, and I'm so mad that COVID happened, because of course I've kind of halted on that, was to start connecting those kids, those younger students, with mentors who are currently doing that. They're currently out and they're either indie or they're, you know, professionally signed, whatever, but making those connections with the kids at a younger age so that they can feel, you know, empowered and encouraged to keep up those pursuits.
And how do you move from, let's say, writing something to actually getting it published? Like, how can, like, let's say there's a young person at home and they've been doing some creative writing on their own and they think that they might have something that's good enough that other people out there should read. Like, where do they go? What do they do?
I mean, well, there are two ways that you can do that. You can do traditional publishing, which is submitting inquiries to, you know, big houses and hoping that someone picks it up and loves it. And if that's the way you want to go, you just have to make sure that you, you know, put that manuscript together the right way, get it edited. I'll never send in anything unedited, like invest in editing. And
that would be professionally edited or?
Professional. Like, don't get your cousin, sister, best friend, uncle, you know, whoever. Makes if they are qualified to edit your stuff, feel free to get them to do it.
Okay.
But reach out to a professional editor. There are avenues where you can get, there's a site now, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but they have access to editors who used to work for the big six publishers, you know, and now they're independent. So you can access these people now and you can hire them to work on your stuff and they will get your manuscripts ready for those publishing houses, right?
Mm-hmm. Who are the big six?
Oh my God. Like Harlequin, I don't even know anymore.
Random House,
yes. I can't think of them. I don't really keep up anymore with the Big Six.
Okay. Because you got what you need already.
I never went to the Big Six. I never did the research of the Big Six like everyone else, because what I wanted to write, what I wanted to publish, mm-hmm. they didn't want.
Okay.
Period. When I wanted to write fantasy for POC, and at the time, that was not marketable. It's becoming marketable. You're seeing it a lot more now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, what I wanted to write was not marketable. Thanks to Black Panther, Luke Cage.
I was like just Netflix. About to ask, how did Black Panther impact like your ability to move your books? If
yes,
it did at
Black
all.
Black Panther changed the scene, right? Because here I am with my books with black faces on them for 6 years, like just pushing as hard as I can, and actually having people tell me, like, you know, your books are great. They would probably sell better if you just like put a symbol on the front instead of the face, or change the cover. Basically, telling me to remove the face of my character from the book.
Right.
And I just,
were those black people who were telling you that, or
it was some of everybody, honestly.
Okay. Okay.
There are a lot of authors who are black who have done it and they've seen success in it. So they're like, girl, you can find success if you do it this way. And I'm like, I don't want to do it that way. I write, this is my passion, and I want to stay true to that. I don't want to change my message or the reason I'm doing this to make a few extra dollars. If
or
I have
branding.
To wait a little bit for me, if my audience to find me, that's fine. I'm okay. But when Black Panther hit the scene, everyone started searching for material for fantasy stories that were focusing on, you know, the African diaspora or whatever. You know what I mean? They wanted to see their faces. They're like, wait a minute, we can have this now, you know? And there's a huge fantasy community that are POC. Like, we're out there. We grew up with this material. And that's when the change started happening. That's when more white authors started writing books with black faces on them, because now it's marketable. You know what I mean? Now everyone's picking up covers that have, you know, characters of color on them, because wait, there's a market for it. So for me, sitting there at the time with my 20 books that were already out and seeing the shift, I'm like, oh, here it comes. Like, this is what I've been waiting for. You know what I mean? This is what I've been pushing for. So it was amazing to see that, and right after that is when things just kind of took off for me.
That's one thing that I've been very cognizant of, when, because I'm an avid book lover, and what you said about like white authors writing black characters, it's very tricky because like I've been picking up books on Native people here in Canada, and getting back and being disappointed when I'm like, oh great, I got this great book that's gonna teach me about this information about culture and so on and so forth, and then I find out that the author is white, you know? And that's one of the things that's been really disappointing because I really want to support Black, Indigenous, and POC writers and authors, but then, you know, there's this whole appropriation of not even culture, just the face, and making it seem like it belongs to someone else. So, like, how have you kind of counteracted that, if you've encountered that, or, yeah.
So I have been honest with a lot of my white author pals who come to me and they're like asking permission to write the stories almost. And I'm like, you don't need my permission. If you want to write that story, you write it, but make sure you get a sensitivity reader. Make sure you're not negatively impacting, you know, or putting any stereotypes in your books because we're tired of seeing that. Make sure you do it right. I'm not going to tell you yes or no. And it's weird to be the black friend in the room right now with the authors because it's like they're all like, so can we? And I'm like, I don't have the answer for you. I'm not going to say yay or nay, but if you do it right. And don't portray it as if you're someone that you're not. There was a big tip about someone, I'm not going to put any names out there, publishing books as if they were African American and they were not, you know what I mean? Hiding behind a pen name. It's like, don't do that at all because that is not okay. But it's like, make sure you represent. I mean, I'm all for it. Like, but there's now an avenue of employment that is basically for cultural sensitivity readers. They are reading books written by white people who have found that this is now profitable. But at least in some way are trying to be respectful of the stories they're writing. So I appreciate it for that. But it's a bit of a slap in the face after some of these very same authors have been telling me to take these black faces off of my covers. And now I'm looking up
And now
and
they
they're
want to put it
publishing.
on.
Yes.
Now let's go with the trend. Yes. And I'm like, well,
wait, sis, I remember that message you sent me 2, 3 years back.
Remember when?
You know.
Yeah. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to author, writer, Jessica Cage, all the way from Chicago. We're going to take a quick break. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Sufi woman, bring me Rumi till I fall asleep up on your bosom. Sufi woman, you're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming. You go shine your eyes, you don't put it on me. Put the liquor spell on me. What thing you do to me? You no go walk on me. You go see. You go 999. You go shake it. You go see the gardens in La Bruja, La Bruja. Should ever die, should could die, my room, La Bruja, La Bruja. Should ever die, should could die, my room, La Bruja, La Bruja. Should ever die, she dies, as in Yalila, Yalila. Sufi woman, bring me Rumi till I fall asleep up on your bosom. Sufi woman, you're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming. Gypsy, gypsy woman, we go dance until we dizzy. Gypsy woman, know your bar hold got me tipsy. I dead, oh, you run the star. You left lipstick on my heart. I look dead inside the star. You go shine your eyes, you don't put it on me. Put a liquor spell on me. What thing you do to me? You no go walk on me. You go see. You go 999. You go shake it. You go see that God is in La Bruja, La Bruja. She never dies, she could die, my room, La Bruja, La Bruja. She never
diamond, La Bruja, La Bruja. Si te me dais, si te dais, dale, ya lela, ya lela. Me puto todo. Sufi woman, bring me roomy till I fall asleep up on your bosom. Sufi woman, you're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming. Tiptoe. In La Bruja, in La Bruja. Si te me dais, si te dais, my room. La Bruja, in La Bruja. Si te me dais, si te dais, my room. La Bruja, in La Bruja. Si te me dais, si te dais, la Bruja.
We are back, we are back, we are back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm in studios with
Renee Jordan.
And just in case you're tuning in for the first time this evening, we are speaking to Jessica Cage, who is an author, a best-selling writer internationally. She's from Chicago, Illinois, and writes books based on fantasy and a little bit of sci-fi as well.
Yes.
So before the break, you kind of just glossed over this number of books that you've been sitting on, which is 20 books.
Yes.
How many pages in average in your books?
Typically somewhere between 350 to 400.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not the biggest books.
Okay, I'm not going to ask you your age. That's just going to be rude. But like 20 books? How long have you been writing?
Now, actually. Yeah. So I've technically been writing and published since I was 10. Those are competitions. So okay. I don't count those in my current
repertoire.
Now. My first story was published at 10. But I published professionally I'm coming up on 10 years now. It'll be 10 years in December.
So two books a year. Approximately.
If you average it out,
Yeah, approximately.
Whew. Yeah.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
So what's...
You know what? It's crazy because it's not a lot. There are people that are pumping out way more than I am. I feel like I'm slow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay.
That sounds like a lot to me. I've been writing a play for the past 4 years and I'm just like, yeah, okay. I'm like... I'm starting to feel good about it.
Do you set a goal for like the year or a monthly goal, or do you kind of just let it happen organically? So I typically publish 2 to 3 a year. That's just what my readers are accustomed to. That's my natural pace. I don't try to push myself. I do like anthologies and submission type stuff. So I don't, of course, count those in my number. So it'll be 2 or 3 of those a year. So I try to pace out my own projects where it's, you know, every 4 to 5 months I'm dropping a new book for the reader.
Okay.
Yeah.
So which book, okay, let's say you're new to the fantasy world, which one of your books should somebody pick up? If they're new to Jessica Cage, they want to see what you're about, which one?
I would say Jen. It's the first of the Jen Rebellion series. It's set 300 years into the future after humans find out that magic and fantasy, like all the fairy tales that we thought were made up, were actually real. Humans go to war because they like, this is our planet. We're not sharing it with, you know, dragons.
Fantasy people? Okay.
Yeah. Our land. But humans end up losing that war, and now we're in a new world that is run by all of these magical creatures. And it's following Jin, who is a genie, and he is my imagining of the genie from the story of Aladdin.
Right.
When I was younger, I used to wonder, like, what the heck happens to him? Like, Aladdin's human. Like, you know, Aladdin and Jasmine, I like them, but eventually they're, like, kaput. So what happens to Jin, or genie? And this is my imagining, and it was supposed to be one book, but now it's seven. So it's a seven
books.
Yeah.
Whew.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the books itself are not for the younger crowd. Why would you say that they're not for the younger crowd? Because you did put the genie in there. And I don't know. I like the genie at a pretty young age.
Well, the characters themselves, like the vampires and genie, it's the material. It's what's happening in the stories that make it inappropriate. Okay. So there's some adult content. And I have had parents say, I don't care. My child can read. If you're the parent and you want the baddest book for your child, that's your prerogative. But
is the content is it the violence or is it more like a sexual content? What type of content?
Sexual, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Some of my books are cleaner. They have heavy kissing or something like that. But then there are other books that, I have a series that is about a siren. You know, if you know anything about siren, it's basically a mermaid. She's calling people to the sea. And she feeds from their sexual energy. So there's a little bit more of that happening in that series. So I don't market my books to kids. I don't want them to transition.
She calls them out to see, and what happens? And PG-wise.
She feeds from their energy in an adult way, if I can say that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Is there research that you have to do in order to prepare, say for example, Jin? Did you do research in order to prepare the characters when it comes to, because those are Jin, the genie is a kind of quote unquote mythical figure that has existed for years and years and years, and
yeah,
you know, like I don't know. Is it that you just imagine what it is and you write it, or do you have a research process that goes along with it? Same with sirens and vampires and other characters as well.
Yeah, so there's always a bit of research, right? Because your readers know these characters or these supernatural beings to some extent. So you don't want to come in and completely kind of slap them in the face with this new and unproven theory, because you have to think that some readers, even I, I'm so invested in some of the lore that it's especially with like Greek mythology, any of those mythos that you have people actually studying in school at this point, right? You can't just come in and say, I want to do it this way and this is how I'm going to write it. So with the siren story, a lot of the history of her story is embedded. It comes from Greek mythology. So I had to research the history and timelines and all that to make sure that it, even though it's such a small piece of my book, it's not like it's, you know, I'm talking about it throughout the series. It's such a small piece, but it has to be done correctly. It has to make sense for the reader who knows mythology or the reader who is invested in maybe a character that I'll mention in the book. It needs to make sense. So I can't just pick and choose what I want. Some authors may do that, but I feel like there's a certain level of respect that has to be given to the work that's already been done, you know what I mean? And to the structure that there is. I love creating my own creatures. So if I create a creature, I'm doing whatever I want with it. But if I'm using something that I know has existed way outside of my work, I'm going to make sure that I do the research and represent it the right way.
Mm. So you draw a little bit from mythology. You draw a little bit from the characters that you see on the train and that you see outside. Is there ever a book where you put yourself in there?
So I used to say no to that question, but now I'm like, I there's a piece of me in every single one of my books. Like, as I read them now, I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah,
you're discovering it as you read your own book?
Yes, and I've had my best friend, she has read everything that I wrote, and for a long time I didn't know, because I'm like, y'all don't need to read my stuff. Like, thanks for the support, but mind your business. But she's an actual fan of my work, and now she's calling me out, girl, this is so you. Oh, this is so me. So it's our relationship I have used as a base for a lot of the friendships, you know what I mean? Because she's such a great friend. So there are pieces of, there's pieces of my grandmother and some of the lessons that the characters learn. There's pieces of my mother and the sassiness of some of the characters. So I'm pulling from my life, and I never realize it, but, you know, they say, like, you know, any great writer or great artist, whatever your medium is, you're putting some of yourself in there. You're taking a piece of yourself with everything you create. So I used to be like, no, this thing got nothing to do with me. These are vampires. But now I'm like, yeah, it's a little bit of me. It's a little bit of me in there.
And what would you say is your favorite of all your books? Which one do you love the most?
Oh no!
It's like asking somebody who's your favorite. Which one of your children is your favorite child?
Right, like I love them all so much for very different reasons. You know what I mean? I love the Siren series because that's the series where I feel like I found my voice. You know, I found my tone, my style. Like I really kind of, you know, got in there and was like, this is who I am as a writer. I love the Jin Rebellion because it challenged me to write more like amazing and intricate like battle scenes and just build this entire new world. I had never really done that before. I've built pieces of them, you know, but I took a lot from like modern society. But in this series, everything is strictly from my mind. So like the rules, the laws, like I had to create all of that. So I challenged myself a lot more with that series. I love the Hired Vampire is my first. I wrote that series when I was pregnant with my son. It was my motivation because I was like, I can't be, you know, telling him to follow his dreams and reach for the stars, and I'm not even doing it for myself. So that was my like breakout. Like I'm doing this. I'm you know, shaking away the fears and going for my dreams. So every single one of my books, I love for a different reason. I don't know that I have a favorite.
My question for you, how important has it been for you to write female characters?
Oh, so that question. Okay, so my very first book that I wrote for my younger cousins who were, at the time, we were all like in love with Twilight, right?
Oh boy.
And I love it. I'm a Twilight, oh my God, Team Edward all day. But what I did not like was how they treated Bella. She was weak, and they kept telling her she didn't know what she liked, she didn't know what she wanted. They kept dismissing her. She needed someone to save her every other page. I was like, we cannot do this. So I wanted to represent women in a real way. So the series, The Hired Vampires, there's five women, and they're all at a different point of their personal growth, right? And the way I used to introduce this book, I say, we all want to be superwomen, but we have to understand that we don't wake up superwomen, right? We have to grow, we have to build, we have to fight for that superwoman. I was raised by a single mother. I grew up in a house with my grandmother. They were strong women. Yes, men were around them, but they weren't asking for help from there every 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like they, if they had a problem, they had a solution. They figured it out. So I wanted to portray characters, women, who were figuring it out, like doing it the way I do it every single day. My mother do it, does it. So I wanted to represent, you know, women in a way of strength that didn't make us seem hard. Like they're still, you know, going through things. They're still emotional creatures, but they are strong and they are figuring it out. And the men are there, but they're like accessories almost. Like, you got a girl, power, you know what I mean, in the background. Because that's how I feel like women, we are doing it. We're out here, we're taking charge, and that's how we need to be portrayed in the media.
And so, conversely, Jin is a male character.
Yes.
And like, how do you tackle writing male characters?
I bug my brothers a lot. I don't know that my brothers realize how many psychological tests I've given them to, like, structure out my characters. And apparently I've done a good job. You know, I have gotten a lot of compliments from men. It's okay from women, but for a man to tell me, like, you are a female who wrote this book, a woman who wrote this man, and I wouldn't even be able to tell. Like, this is a man here. And I, just as much as I do research on, you know, the fantasy and the lore and the mythology, I had to research, like, how would a man, like, I would watch my brothers, like, how did he respond to her dress, or how did he do this? And I would read other books that were by women from the male perspective. And I'd be like, well, girl, he is not going to notice the sparkles on her. This is a manly man, you know, that you're writing. And then he's like, ooh, the tassels on her dress was sparkly and matched her shoes, the silhouette so perfectly. And I'm like, would this manly man really know that? Would he really know the name of the silhouette of her dress? You know what I mean? Like, is that something that's going through? And I would bounced that off my brother. He was like, "Nah, I would never see that." You know what I mean? Like, I would be like, "Oh, that dress is nice," but I'm not gonna be naming a cut and a style and all that. So I would, my brothers, my male friends, and I didn't want to write the same man for every male character, right? I wanted them to be as complex as my female characters. So I would study different guys, like the men on the trains or the guys that I work with. I would be asking them questions if I could, like, can I ask you a couple questions? It may seem weird, but if they would answer, then I would have more, you know, to go off of to draw from these characters.
What type of questions, what other questions do you ask? Just besides the description of a woman, like, how do you develop the character in terms of questions?
So I base my questions purely on reactions to like circumstance, right? I didn't want to ask them about like, how would you wear your hair or whatever, right? It was just like the smallest detail, like if you came into a room and it's overcrowded, where are you going to sit? Stuff like that, right? Like, how do you, like my uncle would always say, I'll never sit with my back to the door. So that was something that I'm like, I have to put this in.
Or to the window.
Right, like, he's like, I have to see both exits, windows, yeah. Everything. And I noticed that, and then I started paying attention, like, there are a lot of guys who do that. Like, I never paid attention to it before, but I see that, you know what I mean? It was those little things that I wanted to pick up on, because I feel like when you're writing a character, like, I can give him whatever dialogue I want. I can make him look however I want. But it's those little intricate things that make them feel more human and more relatable. It's the things you don't think about. And that's what I wanted to put in these characters.
Interesting. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are talking to Jessica Cage, an author based in Chicago, Illinois, who does write a more adult fantasy fiction. So we're going to come back because we got to take a quick break. We're going to play some music for y'all. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT
90.3
FM.
I just wanna be the perfect match. You don't even gonna be the perfect match, baby. He becomes so attached.
We are back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm in studios with...
Renee Jordan.
And we are talking to international award-winning author Jessica Cage, based in Chicago, Illinois. She writes fantasy fiction, adult fantasy fiction. And so I found you... Well, that I didn't find you. Well, I found you. I connected with you on TikTok, which I feel has been like a really good platform for all kinds of artists. How has that platform been for you? Like, what has happened for you in terms of being on TikTok as an author?
I am shocked. So I got on TikTok, I think like most people, like quarantine and just like finding something to pass the time. I didn't post. I was just one of the people lurking. I'm like, nobody, I mean, what am I going to post on TikTok? I write books, like there's nothing. But then I was like, you know what, let me just introduce myself, you know, and it was insane, like the love I got from just saying like, hey, I'm here, I write books, and you know, whatever. I was shocked, like in a short time I've gotten quite a big like following there. And I think it's the power of the For You page, which is like, I see stuff that is so specifically me on that page that I'm a little bit worried about it, but also excited because it means that the right people are seeing, you know, my work. And I've seen a huge boost in just sales and reviews and just readers reaching out to me, which is so exciting for everything that I'm planning, you know, moving forward, to be able to connect with, you know, new readers and audiences and figure out, you know, what you guys are wanting to see. It's been really exciting.
Yeah. One of my questions is, because you write books and now we're in the 1 minute video era, the very short attention span era, have you found it challenging in terms of like getting people to be interested in books, especially a medium that you have to really sit down and take it in? Even though you say the books are short, it's still, you're gonna be there for more than an hour reading, even if you're a really fast reader.
Yeah. Well, so as an author, as a writer, we have to have what we call elevator pitches. We have to be able to pitch our books within like three sentences, right?
Right.
And let's hear it.
Yeah. There you go.
My standard elevator pitch is, you know, hi, I'm Jessica Cage. I write books of fantasy featuring strong characters of color. And that alone is usually enough to be like, all right, tell me more, right? But if I'm talking about a specific book, so for like Siren series, I will say, This book is about Serenata. She's the daughter of a siren and a warlock. Both sides of her family tree think that she's too powerful to exist, and now she's on a run to save her life. So I have to be able to put that in there, like, wait, siren and warlock, what? Wait, they both, her both sides of her family? You want to, like, put these little plot points in their head right away, right? So it's something that we are tuning and trying to fine-tune forever. Like, our book descriptions have to capture you in 300 words or less. So we're always, you know, challenging ourselves. It's just translating that to video. And I thought it would be more difficult, but it really isn't. I like to put together, you know, graphic images and stuff like that. So if you find the right music for TikTok, you can put it all together. And then it's like, I just hop on whatever trend they have going and apply it to my books, you know what I mean? So if there's a catchy tune or whatever, transition, like, you know, some of the transition, I love the ones where they, like, flip their hair and their makeup is different or whatever. I'll find a way to, like, flip a piece of paper and now it's a book, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'm going to get on your For You page doing the trend, but then, like, intriguing you with something a little bit different, making it my own.
Right. Hmm.
Interesting sales angle. You know, I was just thinking myself this week, we're spending so much time lately on the screen that I'm actually, and I stopped buying paper books. So I was like, they're taking up too much space, and I started buying a lot of ebooks. But now I feel like I need to move back to the paper books because of all this screen time. Do you find that you're selling more paper books these days?
Yes. I think it's the same. Like, I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm looking at my job computer for so many hours a day, and then I'm looking at my phone for, like, you know, my social media stuff, and then I have to be on my computer writing. So it's a lot of screen time. I've always been a paperback girl. Like, only time I do ebooks is if I'm traveling, because you can then take 300 books with you in one little device and it's fine. I don't want to carry a bag with that many books in it. So I've always been paperback. I love holding it, the physical touch. But I'm seeing lately a lot more people are investing. Even people, because you can come to my website and buy books directly from me. I've seen an influx of those purchases. It's just people are at home and they're just trying to be, you know, comfortable. And I feel like there's a level of comfort that comes with sitting in a corner with a book disconnected. Because with a paperback or a hardback, you're disconnected from the world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Like, There's no text message interrupting that time.
No notifications dropping down on the top of the page, you know, interrupting.
Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
And also, if you are upside down reading the book and the book slips out of your hand, you're not going to break your nose.
It depends on the book.
Like, I don't know. Her book is 400 pages. I know 400 pages could fly in your face.
Yeah. No, 400 pages is okay. The damage is definitely less if it's a book.
Yeah.
Maybe we could create something for you, though, like a little bungee cord to hang off the book, you know?
No, I've always loved books. Like, even now, like, I have 3 bookcases full of books, and some of those are doubled up as it is. So I'll take hardcover books, softcover books any day over. I've never gotten into reading ebooks. I've never read anything on a phone or on an iPad. It just doesn't appeal to me. I love flipping pages.
You know what? I think it depends on the type of book that you're reading. So I think if it's a fantasy book, you're going to keep turning the pages and you're sort of absorbing the story as you go. Whereas if it's a self-help book, or if it's a book for school or something where you're learning something, you highlight a lot of stuff. So, and once you highlight them in an ebook, you're able to kind of put them all on one page, which you can't really do when you have the book. That's what I think is the reason why the ebook sort of won me over in some aspects. And then I don't have to think about what to do with it afterwards. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, this book is so good, but it's just sitting here and it's gathering dust. And then I pick it up to give it away, and I'm like, no, but I like this page, and I have this bookmark in it. And so I'm like, at least if it's in my phone, it's so small, and I have it all the time. The whole collection.
Yeah,
and that's just me.
I grew up in a household where it felt like I was living in Beauty and the Beast. My grandmother had a literal wall-sized bookshelf.
Okay. Okay.
Double-sided. So I get it from her. Like I
double-sided?
Yes, and I used to have a little nook that I would sit in that was right by the bookshelf, and it was like hidden away, and I would sit there in my nook because I was tiny at the time and I could fit there. No one else could, so it was like my little space that I would read. And I sometimes would be grabbing books off that shelf. I had no business reading at that age, but that's another story.
Oh, I know a little bit about that. Like, my stepmother used to put books on top of the top shelf.
The top shelf book.
And I just jump on a chair, and then I just start reading the book, and I'm like, whoo, wait a minute, this is a bit hotter than I thought. I'm still reading it, though. I had no business reading those books at that age, but I found them, and I read them. I love how parents hide books, quote-unquote. But they're not hidden. It's like it's on the bookshelf. Like, if you're going to hide it, make some effort.
You know, but I was listening to something the other day, and they were talking about encouraging your kids to read. And they said it's so much better to have that physical book, because when your kids see you with the phone, like if I'm reading an ebook, they don't know if I'm reading a book or checking messages or listening to, I don't know, a video music or something passive. But if they see a book, then they're like, okay, you know, mommy reads, or you know, daddy reads, or my sister reads, or my aunt reads, or whoever reads. If you see a lot of reading around you, then it becomes like regular nature, and it just becomes something that's natural to them. So then they wouldn't have these like sort of attitudes once they get to school, like, oh, why is this person always reading all the time? That's weird, you know?
Yeah,
because it's just normal.
Yeah, I agree. My son has a bookshelf of his own now. He's an avid reader, and he organizes his bookshelves based on his reading, like his interest of it. And then he has a shelf that's like books he'll never get rid of, like no matter how old he gets. Because at the end of every year, we would donate the books that he's read to his school or right. to any like, local program that we can find. But I think it's because he grew up around me and my grandmother's. Predominantly we had physical books, and he saw it and he would like emulate us. He would go get a book even though he could not read at the time, and he would sit on the couch next to me with his book, and he'd just be, you know, flipping pages. And it's like you said, they are your kids are going to do what they see, you know what I mean? You have to be that example. And like you said, on your phone, I could be doing anything on my phone. I could be, you know, watching TikToks all day, you don't know. So I do try to make it a point that we have reading time, and now it's like I don't even have to do it. He does it himself. You know, I can find him any day in a corner reading a book about, and he's into fantasy. He's like loving this, like Wings of Fire. I think that's what it's called. It's like dragons and stuff. So very much his mother's child.
I don't know if you have any views on this, but when you're growing up and you're in school, the curriculum seems to be so structured and so strict in terms of the type of books that you're reading. And the books sometimes don't appeal to young people, or don't appeal maybe to Black youth. They don't necessarily see themselves in those classics that are read in school. Like, do you think that there should be a little bit of an opening in the curriculum in terms of what they read and how they read and how it's structured?
Absolutely. That's without a doubt. And I mean, nothing against the classics, but like bring some new stuff in, like show, you know, because I feel like there's so much more representation now than there ever was before. And that's needed. And not just for the kid of, you know, that's colored, like a person of color, but for white kids too. Like they should be reading stuff that is more than just themselves. You know what I mean? That's how you mm-hmm. you know, learn empathy, and you know, you understand other cultures. It's important. And I think a lot of people think that when I say, oh, I write POC, that I feel like it should only be POC. Like, no, I feel like there should be more representation, so even my white readers, who I have a lot of, can pick up these books and see us in a positive light, you know what I mean, and see us as human, because we're all going through the same, you know, mental, emotional growth, and they don't see that enough. You know what I mean? So I think for both sides of it, there needs to be an opening. There needs to be an opportunity to introduce them to newer works that represent